And the other thing is just more, just to describe a model and say, wouldn't it be nice to understand how this model works? And maybe some of you already do understand something about it, so you can tell me. So the first topic is, what are the various considerations regarding mode creation or the struct holography or quantum fluctuations of causal sets have led various different people to consider the possibility that in an expanding universe, there's a violation of energy conservation. And so I won't review the different reasonings that have led people to consider that, but I just want to point out that, well, remind you that if that happens, we're in trouble with the Einstein equation because it implies energy conservation, so something has to be done. And I'll describe to you what people have done. So, I should add to this holography. So the problem is the Bianchi identity. We write the Einstein tensor is 8 pi GTAB. The contracted Bianchi identity implies divergence of the Einstein tensor is 0. And so the divergence of the stress tensor must be 0. So we have no choice but to conserve energy or change the Einstein equation somehow. So the idea is to relax the Einstein equation somehow. And what's mostly been discussed is in the context of Roberts and Walker symmetry, where it's sort of obvious what you might do. So there we can take the TT component of the Einstein equation, and that's one of the initial value constraint equations. Doesn't involve second time derivatives. And for example, it would have, in a simple case, the form Hubble constant squared is the energy density. So this involves first time derivatives, but not second time derivatives. And then the RR equation, for instance, would be 8 pi GTRR, and that involves second time derivatives. So together, these are sort of the content of the Einstein equations in that symmetry. But we also have, as a consequence of the Einstein equations, I'm sure you all noticed, I'm just reminding you, that the divergence of the stress tensor is 0. If we take the time component of that equation, we just get that the time derivative of the energy density is related to the Hubble constant or Hubble function and the energy density and pressure. So if we look back at the first equation, we see that taking the time derivative of the energy density on the right-hand side would bring in a time derivative of the time derivative of the scale factor on the left-hand side. So really putting together the first equation and the conservation, we'll get a second order equation on the scale factor, which can, in effect, substitute for the RR component of the Einstein equation. And as everybody knows, it's convenient to, in fact, often convenient to compute that way, just using the constraint equation and energy conservation. So we can replace the RR equation by energy conservation. Now, suppose we're in a situation where energy is not conserved, so then the divergence of TA T component is some Q that's not zero. Well, we could still use the first equation, the constraint equation, and the non-conservation of energy equation as our basic equations with which to evolve the system, and it's a well-defined system of equations, and that means we've just dropped this RR equation. And so this, as you've seen in various articles, is what people have done when they wanted to or were forced to consider a non-conserved energy for some reason, one of the reasons I mentioned earlier. Now, a covariant formulation of what's going on here was actually described by Danielson in a paper called, Transplanckian Mode Creation and something or other, I can't remember the title, but it's a nice paper. He was considering modes are born at a certain time, at a certain fixed proper wavelength. And just because the adiabatic condition is only a sort of approximate notion, you can't expect those modes will be born with exactly zero energy. So new energy is being fed into the system, perhaps. And he estimated some order of magnitude scaling for what that energy might be. And he wanted to investigate how that would affect the evolution of the scale factor. Yeah.
So does that problem already arise if you set the mode strictly in the ground state and you have the quantum vacuum energy?
No, if you could figure out
if you understand, which I don't, but you might, how to define or normalize stress energy tensor in the context where modes are being created and inserted in an instantaneous adiabatic vacuum, then no, it wouldn't arise. That's right. If you can figure out how to do it in a way that whatever stress tensor you want to put in the Einstein equations is exactly conserved, yeah, then this problem would not arise. So I'm talking about
I think you've answered the same. Unless you solve the cosmological constant problem, this problem arises.
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't want to make any grand claims. I'm just trying to just make some remarks. We can talk about it. Okay, so I really appreciated Danielson's following remark. So he said, what you can do is you can relax the trace of the Einstein equation. That's an incoherently defined piece of the Einstein equation to give up. It's meaningful in any situation. You don't need any Robertson-Walker symmetry. So that really means that what you're imposing is that GAB, can you all see this when I point to it?
Yes.
GAB is 8 pi g TAB plus some arbitrary function times the metric that's undetermined. So the content of the equation is, in other words, just that the trace-free part of these two match.
So you allow the cosmological constant to be non-constant?
Right. This would allow the cosmological constant to be non-constant. Exactly. Now, Danielson, when he introduced it, referred actually to the derivation of the Einstein equation as a thermodynamic equation of state that I just presented today in the colloquium as one justification or motivation for dropping the trace part. The reason being that when, you know, it's only the trace-free part of the Einstein equation that is derived as the equation of state. When I derived it, I added conservation of energy after the fact to get the trace part. So Danielson said, maybe we, if we have a situation where energy is not conserved, we should just only impose the trace-free part. And that's a nice idea, I think. Another motivation you might think of for it that's completely independent of the equation of state argument is called unimodular gravity. If you imagine that the field variable is really not a metric, but just a conformal structure or causal structure of space-time, so that in the variational principle that leads to the Einstein equation, the determinant of the metric is fixed and just not varied. It's fixed to some arbitrary fixed thing. Then this is precisely the equation you derive, only the trace-free part of the Einstein equation. So there are a couple of ideas that seem non-trivial that you could think about that might motivate you to consider such an equation. But also, Danielson pointed out that this isn't, you know, it's still a highly constrained proposal for the following reason, that there's still an implication of the Bianchi identity. Actually, I guess I need to put this back. So suppose we, yes?
In the variation principle, how would phi occur in the action?
I'll get to that in a second. That's a good question. So suppose we have an equation of this form. It's still true that the Bianchi identity implies the divergence of GAB is zero. And therefore, the divergence of the stress tensor must be proportional to the gradient of this unknown function phi. So we get a constraint. This only works if the nature of the violation of energy conservation is special in the way that the divergence of TAB is the gradient of a scalar. And if you just arbitrarily violate energy conservation, that certainly won't be true. Now, in Robertson-Walker symmetry, of course, it's automatically true, because this vector, which has an index b, divergence of t, can only be pointing along the cosmological fluid. It can only have one component just by the symmetry. And if it's only one function, then of course we can invent a phi that it's the gradient of. So it's completely automatic that this condition is satisfied. But that's extremely special to Robertson-Walker. Even if we keep homogeneity and just allow an anisotropic spatial metric, so like in a Bianchi model, we already lose the symmetry argument that guarantees that divergence of T is gradient of a scalar. So this raises the question, if you want to pursue this idea seriously, there better be some way to guarantee that the divergence of the stress tensor is gradient of a scalar. So I've been fooling around with this a little bit, looking for an action principle that would fail to have the full Diffeo symmetry, but would somehow have just the right amount of symmetry so the divergence of T was gradient of a scalar, but not more. And so it seems to me, having proved it's impossible, but everything I tried led back to it being equivalent to actually divergence of T being zero. It might be that you have to redefine the metric, but it's true.
You said that you could get it by setting the determinant equal to a constant, right? Determinant of the metric.
Yes.
But that would suggest that you add to the action the range multiplier times the determinant of the metric. That looks just like a symmetric constant.
Yeah.
And then you're back to...
But that leads back to pure unimodular gravity, which it turns out actually is not a generalization of Einstein's equation. It just allows for a constant cosmological constant. Nothing else is different.
Exactly.
So it doesn't allow for any interesting energy violation. It's not a generalization. See, the point is that you could redefine the stress tensor to be basically T plus phi times GAV. And that redefined stress tensor would now be conserved. And you end up just rederiving that's the effective stress tensor for your field. So you've just written the theory in a funny way. So as far as I can see, there's no Lagrangian way to exploit this. And so it has to be couched in a more exotic setting where it's like I described at the beginning. The violation is coming not of energy conservation is coming not from an action that doesn't have this symmetry, but it's really outside the framework of the action principle. And that's scary. It's hard to, it's scary because constructing a consistent theory that has that feature is probably not going to be easy. Maybe it's possible. The last thing I just wanted to comment on here is Renaud asked me when we were talking about this, as an alternative to insisting that the divergence is gradient of a scalar, how about relaxing four Einstein equations instead of just the trace part? The catch is that the trace is a coherently defined piece of the wave of the Einstein equation that you can say you're dropping. To drop four equations, you really need, I guess, some other structure. If you have a local Lorentz violating theory, then you've got a vector field, and you can imagine using that vector to specify which four Einstein equations you're dropping, and that might be an interesting path to take. But in any case, there's certainly, if anybody wants to consider violating energy conservation, please don't be fooled by Robertson-Walker symmetry into thinking that what you're doing is so benign. There's a serious question there.
What happens from this point of view for the black hole evaporation when you want to go within the Planck, the distance of the horizon, and you want to make energy from something or other, because we know that you can't have a usual field theory within that region. So how do you doctor up?
That's going way beyond anything I could begin to answer. Okay, that's it for the first remark. We could talk about it. Then I have one other remark.
Instead of the trace, could you connect the determinant or something?
The determinant. Is that meaningful? The determinant is not a scalar. So.
Participation distance.
I'm not sure. We could think about it, but I don't think it's a meaningful statement.
No, it is. It's just a part of the argument.
I don't
Okay, we can talk about it. Okay, so should I go ahead and make the other comment?
Yes.
This is just to, we can discuss this at the wine and cheese or whatever. The other comment's totally different, and it goes more to the just thinking about models of mode creation. So all of us are interested in the idea that maybe modes appear at some time, either appear because they start propagating and weren't before, as Renaud talked about, or maybe they're just created from scratch. And if we just treat linear field theory, it's easy to imagine how to make such a model compatible with what we observe, as many people here have already discussed and investigated, just sort of ease the mode into the adiabatic vacuum or something close enough to it, and then the predictions will be the same as if the mode had existed all along. And so it's very easy. But let's ask more of ourselves and say, can we do the same thing if the field is an interacting field? So then, because, I mean, fields are interacting. So we have then the ambient vacuum. This mode is about to be created, and it's being delivered into a community of other modes that are already interacting and are presumably in some interacting adiabatic vacuum. And now I turn on a new mode, and I think if it suddenly, the moment it's born, starts interacting with all the modes around it, it's going to give them a big shock. And I can't, so the first question is, wouldn't the adiabatic vacuum that the new mode is injected into be disturbed in an unacceptable way? So I don't know, maybe not, but it seemed to me intuitively it would be. So I started thinking, let's just get take care of that by making the coupling constant between the newborn mode and the rest of the modes wavelength dependent, which is kind of at least a well-defined model. So we could easily imagine writing down a model where the modes are born free, and only after they've redshifted a certain amount do they start talking to the other modes. It's kind of a form of asymptotic freedom for the modes that are just at the moment they're born. So we imagine that the coupling is, say, a specified function of wave vectors, so that the modes start talking to each other in a kind of gradual way, because the redshifting is gradual, given that the scale factor is expanding slowly relative to the frequency of the modes. The question is, would the interacting vacuum of all these modes evolve, adjust nicely and slowly enough to remain in the adiabatic state with an energy that remains close to zero? So I just wanted to define that model and ask the question. I hope to look at it myself, unless somebody here explains to me why it's a bad idea or why they already know the answer. But it seems like we shouldn't be satisfied to do the thing with, to give birth to modes in free field theory. We have to understand how the interacting vacuum accommodates the newborn modes.
But I'm saying it could be relevant for extension. Right?
Sure. You could consider a 5-4 theory and just treat the whole thing perturbatively, maybe. I don't. It seems like a reasonable, manageable model to actually pursue.
Then why exactly would you say that interaction that we normally not consider, I mean, you consider that to be small, why would that be
Which interaction do we normally consider to be strong?
It might be a factor of 40 or some other dimension, but then we consider that only for the question of time that drives the effect and so on. But the other calculation will carry that interaction.
Well, even if the inflaton vacuum is normally treated as being, in effect, a free field vacuum, there are all the other quantum fields that have to be born also, right? And they are interacting. Everything is interacting. So I think it's an issue. We have a huge energy potentially locked up in the vacuum. We think we understand in standard field theory how to renormalize away the divergence and have a conserved stress tensor. But if we start injecting new modes, basically, can we get away with it?
with interactions present. That's all I wanted to mention.
Questions, comments?
I might be getting that wrong, but what you just said at the end, that you would want modes not to interact just after they are born, and then at some point later they start interacting. Is that equivalent of saying that right when the mode is born, or you should be able to find, you should be able to define a k variable in which they decouple, and then at some point later it would not be able to find whatever variable in which they decouple?
Yeah, I guess, so I really would just, that's exactly what I'm thinking. I would break it up into two parts. Is it true first, my worry that if it interacted immediately, that it would be inconsistent with adiabatic evolution of the interacting vacuum? If it's not, if that's not true, then there's no need to gradually turn on the coupling. Maybe it's okay. But if it is a problem, then I would just say, let me make a model where I know what state to put it into if it were a free field. I'll just put it in the adiabatic vacuum, sufficiently accurately defined. And then just adiabatically turn on its interaction with the other modes. And then I'm just wondering, can we really, would that adiabatically evolve the whole interacting vacuum in a way that is consistent with any energy pump that's pumped in being very small, with energy conservation and no excitation for that. So the mode I would use is just the co-moving wave number to define the, that would be the way I specify the mode. With a 5/4 interaction, everything would, you could interact any wave vectors that conserve momentum and didn't go above the cutoff, and it would just define a truncated interacting field theory.
And whatever happens to wind and late times, they are born, then at some point they start interacting, and whatever happens after that would depend on the type
of interaction.
Exactly. Whether they decouple at the end again or whether they
stay. Or not. Yeah, I mean, what they would do is evolve to the vacuum in this room or whatever. The vacuum of all the interacting fields.
Okay, so let's close the session and thank you.